Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Dave Rebuck, the director of New Jersey's Division of Gaming Enforcement, on how his agency has responded to the downsizing of the Atlantic City gaming market over the past year. David Rebuck has clearly ridden the roller coaster in Atlantic City. Appointed by Governor Chris Christie in 2011 to completely revamp gaming regulation in the state, he got involved in promulgating the rules for online gaming approved by the state legislature in 2013. And within the past year, he has overseen the closure of four boardwalk casinos at a cost of more than 8,000 jobs. He talks about iGaming, the status of Revel, the future of Atlantic City, sports betting, fantasy sports wagering, and the possibilities for expanded gaming in New Jersey. He also reveals that due to costs, reassignments, and retirements, his agency was able to save the state casino industry more than $12 million in the past fiscal year. He spoke with me at his offices in Atlantic City in August. Dave Rebuck, thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. It's good to catch up with you again every summer. I'll be here for a few more days, but I'm glad we could get together, and thanks for taking the time.
That's right. I love it when you come back to Atlantic City. You need to stay here a longer period
well,
of time.
Well, I do. If I could stay here through the fall season, which we all know is the nicest part of the
best part of the year
here, I would do that, but the kids need to go back to school. So. Well, you know, this summer for me has been a little less stressful than last summer, and I think probably for the entire city. What has been the impact of the closures of the casinos and the real difficulties in Atlantic City over the last year on the DGE?
Well, the major impact in closures of the casinos has been an economic impact on the region, certainly with a significant loss in jobs and, you know, the filtering down to other businesses who supply goods and services to the region that are now impacted. So that was a very tough year of 2014 for us. We lost one property in January with the Atlantic Club closing, and then we had three other properties in the August and September period of time shut down and close: Revel, Showboat, and Trump Plaza. So our impact on us was, as regulators, was we're extremely busy in doing our duties to make sure that the closures were done in a professional and effective way without as little impact on the people who were truly impacted, the employees, as possible. And we adjusted accordingly our resources to deal with the oversight and regulation of eight casinos. Mm-hmm. Opposed to 12, and then we have certainly downsized our staff significantly through attrition and allocating resources to other areas. Mm-hmm. That work in the state. So
right.
We're well positioned in dealing with the oversight and the integrity industry for eight casinos and internet gaming, but you know, it was a very difficult year for all of us. So 15 has been not as difficult, but, you know, we still have a very tough time here in Atlantic mm-hmm. City, and we're continuing to work it through to do what we can do to help the industry get rebounded, get back on its feet.
Okay. There's some people that criticize the level of corporate ownership. For example, Caesars was owning four casinos. One of their casinos closed down, and
right.
You know, there were you know, reports that it was a profitable casino that they closed down. Do you think that had any impact on it? Do you think, well, looking back, you know, should we have continued the restriction of two casinos to one company?
Well, again, those decisions were made long ago. Very difficult to overturn them. I think it's worthwhile for the legislature to look at that moving forward into the future. And it's something that they are looking at, whether or not there's an action by the legislature to restrict ownership interests, yet to be seen. New Jersey's in a very interesting period of time right now where casino gaming has been restricted to one city, obviously Atlantic City. The state has begun the dialogue and the debate as to whether or not that should change.
Mm-hmm.
If it does, the focus is clearly on the highly populated northern region of the state, mm-hmm. New York metropolitan, North Jersey market. Probably the number one market for possible expansion in the United States by the industry because of the population up there as well as the affluence. And I'm sure the legislature, as it considers whether or not expansion is viable, probably look at if it is viable, how it is to be structured with ownership interest in an expanded area. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those side topic items that needs to be addressed as the state looks at whether or not it is even desiring to have an expansion mm-hmm. into the northern part of the state.
Okay. Another issue when these casinos closed were the imposition of deed restrictions on some of the properties. Is that something that DGE gets involved with?
Well, it's, you know, we get involved with it in the sense that we have to look at the deed restrictions in property law. Mm-hmm. And the property, basically, inherent in any property, you know, all private ownership interest, the person has the right to put restrictions on how their land is to be used. And we've been asked to intervene much more than what is normal, mm-hmm. I think. But as we look at the toll picture, and unfortunately, the disputes that have arisen with regards to the Showboat property have brought to light some of the problems of deed restrictions, in that you have one deed restriction that says there has to be casino hotel use for the property, and you have another deed restriction that was put on later that said there should be no mm-hmm. casino hotel use of the property. So we then, normally the courts would intervene and try to settle the disputes and have clear title to the property, but we've been asked to intervene more, and we have chosen at this point in time to allow the normal resources to play to look at those type of disputes. But I think the zoning laws, the city, the county, the state, yes, I mean, in the long run, how does this apply when you have casino use only in one city? Mm-hmm. And then you have, through deed restrictions, control of how the property is being used in a city where we don't have a limited number of licenses by law, but you're essentially, the industry is restricting the number of licenses by their own actions. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting challenge, and at this point in time, it's one that we're certainly engaged in.
Okay. One of the casinos that has closed was the Revel, purchased by Florida developer Glenn Straub. Has he applied for a license?
Mr. Straub has applied for a license. We are still in the investigative stage, mm-hmm. Pulling together documents from him and his representatives. He does not have a complete application at mm-hmm. all. And so our review of his application is very limited at this point in time, because, as most regulators would understand, it's very difficult to review an application that's incomplete. And we have an open dialogue with him and his representatives to try to get his application complete.
Okay. What's the status of the gaming equipment in Revel? Is it still there?
It is still there. It was an interesting move by me as a regulator. Mm-hmm. Mr. Straub doesn't have a license, and as part of the bankruptcy action, when he purchased Revel, he was purchased all the gaming equipment. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that that's an unusual step for a regulator to allow that to happen, but we've had an excellent dialogue with him and his representatives to have him understand that his possession of that gaming equipment is unique as an unlicensed person, in that we've entered into an agreement with, through his attorneys and him, of his use of that equipment, his ability to transfer the equipment, his ability to store the equipment, and I feel very comfortable. We've actually had an inspection this week on our agreement with him, and mm-hmm. he's in full compliance. And So it is stored in Revel. Mm-hmm. Over 2,000 slot machines, gaming tables, dice, cards, chips. We mm-hmm. have them all there. We have them all accounted for. And I feel very comfortable that there's no integrity issues mm-hmm. at this point in time. So, okay. It's not the ideal situation, but in Atlantic City, and as a regulator here, you have to be very creative sometimes mm-hmm. to accomplish the goal without being a bureaucrat and pushing a person in and making a very difficult decision and forcing somebody out who may have an interest in opening a building and bring the life back to what is right now a dark building.
Okay. Obviously, the effort right now in Atlantic City is to create more non-gaming amenities. Any role that the DGE has in encouraging that? Or is that pretty much outside of your purview?
No, I mean, most of the there's... I sit on the CRDA, which is the Casino Reinvestment Development right. Authority. So I wear that hat in working as a board member to assist in the redevelopment and funneling revenue into these non-gaming projects. But as DGE, when I put that hat on, there is an area where we have a responsibility to assist, and that is in the area of the alcohol beverage mm-hmm. Venues, whether they're owned by the casino and operated by the casino or whether a third-party vendor. Mm-hmm. And we were very active in working with Bart Blatstein, who purchased the Caesars Pier.
Right.
He's a tenant of that pier, which is owned by Caesars, so that all the liquor licenses and entertainment licenses that use alcohol as part of their business plan, we worked with Mr. Blatstein to have licensed and operational. And I believe that he would be one to tell you that we did that in a very effective and efficient professional way that allowed him to become operational in the time frame that he wanted to allow for a non-gaming mm-hmm. entity to be in operation
right.
this summer for visitors to Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. So in that area, we are very active. In other areas, probably not so much because entertainment
sure.
without alcohol,
right.
that really doesn't fall under us when mm-hmm. it's... other than vendor registering of the entertainer or the company, but that's very, in my mind, that's our business, and
mm-hmm.
we've been doing that for years, and so there's really nothing that impedes the mm-hmm. The casino from expanding into these non-gaming areas on our
okay.
part.
Well, one of the areas you can have a lot of influence is innovation in gaming products, and
okay.
you have declared New Jersey wants to be at the forefront of this, and I think you've shown that in several instances where we've had some really innovative games come to market very quickly here. How's that effort been going?
It's been going great. I mean, our lab led by Eric Weiss has done a great job. We've made it known to the industry, both the casino as well as AGEM and their representatives, that we're ready, willing, and able to look at any device that they want to bring in, whether it be skill-based gaming, whether it be social gaming, whether it be an expansion on a slot machine product that's unique and novel. We'll take it on and we'll look at it in a very prompt way and get a response back to them faster than any other jurisdiction in the United States. It's my commitment to them. And I think we've delivered on that. So we've been in touch with other jurisdictions like Nevada when they have their skill-based games regulations.
Mm-hmm.
We already have ours out there. We're happy to share with them what we've done. Listen, if they can get a product to market out there that then can be used here, great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it. So, but no, I suspect it. The horror days in the past when the industry has looked very negatively on New Jersey as an impediment to innovation and improvement of opportunities is over.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody still has that opinion in the industry, I'm happy to talk to them at G2E and convince them otherwise.
Okay. Now, you mentioned skill games. There's a group in Nevada now meeting manufacturers, operators, regulators to talk about what are skill games, what can be permitted. Do you have any role in that, or are you just like paying attention to that?
Yeah, we've been in touch with Nevada. Mm-hmm. They know what we do and how right. we do it. We told them we're happy if they want to take all our records and mm-hmm. everything we do and implement them in Nevada.
Okay.
No proprietary interest in
sure.
this. It's an area where I do believe that the gaming community needs to be more aggressive in looking at into the future, because I think it's well known in this industry that if it does not adapt and innovate to that, what may be interested to others, particularly the millennial or younger generation, mm-hmm. then it will go the same route as other gaming interests that have fallen off that slippery slope of mm-hmm. Being irrelevant
right.
in what is interesting, exciting, and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. So if they come up with something that you look at and it looks like everything works for you on the regulatory side, you'd be very, very glad to adopt it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and if they go a different route than we do, and they teach us something that we didn't consider, mm-hmm. we'll adapt it. And if they have a minimum standard that's below our minimum standard, then we'll certainly take a look at it to see if we were maybe, you know, we went out of this some 2 years ago.
Right,
so
sure.
maybe we missed something, and we'll adapt and, mm-hmm. and come down. But I'm very confident that the integrity of this area can definitely be regulated. And I think part of the problem now is just the innovators who develop the games are still trying to understand how they can adapt the game to, which essentially was a non-gaming use, to a gaming use. And there's some risk on that on their part. There's some uncertainty on their part. And until they find a game that works and generates a buzz, they're a little conservative in their approach.
Yeah,
and
okay.
so that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't really believe that the regulators are holding up that innovation at this point in time, whether mm-hmm. it's in Nevada or here.
Right, so. Okay. One of the things New Jersey was pretty proactive on was fantasy sports. The legislature passed a bill allowing the casino to offer some sort of fantasy sports activity here, and they just didn't get on top of it. And now, of course, we've seen what's happened since then with the DraftKings and the
right.
FanDuel, and it's a huge industry. Do you think we kind of missed the boat, or the casinos missed the boat anyway, or was the legislation not written correctly, or?
I don't know about the rest of the country, but in New Jersey, we work very closely with the casinos here to adapt it. I believe that the timing wasn't right for us in one way, in that at the same time that the fantasy sports regulations that we approved went out a few years ago, we also became very aggressive in trying to roll out internet gaming.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I think it was very difficult for the casinos in New Jersey to multitask to two new products.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they made a choice, rightly so,
yeah.
I believe, to focus their efforts on internet gaming,
mm-hmm.
which was on a very tight time schedule, a very aggressive time schedule.
Right.
And there was a desire to do it and do it right on their part. What suffered was the fantasy sports, because they couldn't put resources, research and development resources into that. At the same time, you had these other companies that were in the infancy stage developing fully on fantasy sports, and they've grown to what you mentioned now. So in hindsight, I wish they could have multitasked. I would have loved to have been the base for fantasy sports play in the country out of Atlantic
mm-hmm.
City. It just didn't work. And I think it's the stage that fantasy sports play is now, with the companies you mentioned
right.
as well as others, it's obviously played in every,
mm-hmm.
even though it may not supposed to be played in every state,
right.
it's certainly available
yeah.
in every state in the United States, even though some states have determined it's illegal in their state to have fantasy sports play. But by and large, I think it's pretty much known that it's very active.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see. Maybe the casinos and will be like the leagues and partner and be a brand with them
mm-hmm.
as they
right.
play. Certainly the leagues have chosen to do that. The teams, I should say, in the leagues, or the leagues actually have, to be partners with the FanDuels and the DraftKings. Mm-hmm. And there's a little movement. I guess the third largest fantasy sports company was just purchased by, or rumored to be purchased by Amaya. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Right, no question. Well, let's talk about iGaming. That was, as you said, that was very, very aggressive timeline there. Really the second state, and the first state with full casino gaming. At a private level, not operated by the state. I think New Jersey was really at the forefront there. A lot of people have been disappointed in the revenue, but it's been. With all the technical and the regulatory issues you had to go through, I still think it's pretty amazing that it got up and it is where it is today. What's your feeling?
It was a crazy 1 year period of time.
Right, it was.
But it's a real feather in the cap of this division to have my staff to pull this off, and I think it's doing really well now. Mm-hmm. Now, from a regulatory standpoint, it's been a home run for us. We've had issues, but they're small ones.
Small ones. There's been no big scandals, no children playing, nobody playing from out of state.
It's like any other form of gaming, whether it's a brick and mortar, and there are issues, and you deal with them on a day-to-day basis, and you take corrective action to. And the practices that you didn't know were going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But this, like I said, the scandals, the horror stories, the money laundering allegations, widespread organized crime influence, underage gambling, little ladies were losing their house because, they were gambling 24/7 online. It never transpired.
Right.
So, I mean, the size of internet gaming right now in New Jersey is basically the size of a casino.
Right.
And we have surprisingly seen significant increase over the last few months during the summer, which is normally low month for play.
That's been a little surprising.
I don't understand why. We'll accept it, and I'm happy, but it's going against the grain. We'll see what happens and transpires as the year continues on. I think we'll see a gradual increase. I don't think we'll see any skyrocket increase until such time as other jurisdictions are willing to take on the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very niche industry now because you said it's essentially three states, three small states. We have had a lot of dialogue with states who may be interested.
Right.
We continue to have dialogue with companies who are interested in coming into the U.S., maybe watching from afar as other jurisdictions may be looking at it, watching certainly the federal bills that are looking at prohibiting it. So there is a uncertainty in the industry. But we just sit back every day and do what we do in New Jersey to allow it to be the best it can be here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I believe that we definitely have a platform here that is readily adaptable to other jurisdictions, state jurisdictions, and the lessons learned here will be easily adapted to any other jurisdiction who so chooses to get into this business.
Okay.
And if they don't, so be it.
Right. Now I think you've solved certainly the geolocation problem, the ID verification, all that stuff is pretty smoothly done now. The one problem that I think is still a huge hurdle is the payment processing.
Yep.
I spent a full day when I first got here trying to sign on to deposit money, and I just couldn't do it unless I did it from my bank account. And it's just even with these new coding numbers and things like that, it just still doesn't seem to work. I know there's not a lot you can do, but I'm sure you're paying attention to this.
Oh no, we've been working a lot with our partners in the banking industry. and Department of Banking here in the state has been very active in helping us, trying to educate banks, the banks who issue credit mm-hmm. cards. Certainly they've been engaged in dialogue with their federal counterparts in Washington. A lot of uncertainty still with regards, even with the new codes. You know, we've been very engaged with the Vantive Group, who's mm-hmm. been very active in this area. Right. Done a tremendous job, actually, yep. in educating people. And I just, it's, you know, there's, as much as you try to educate people, there's quite a bit of uncertainty still at some very high levels, whether it be in the financial institutions or in the federal government and the Treasury Department. And it's a struggle, but we've certainly had improvements where we were 18 months ago. Without a doubt, there's been improvement, but it could be so much easier should the financial institutions want to really move into this area.
Right.
And again, I think it goes back to what I said earlier. Until there's a risk-reward
right.
benefit analysis, mm-hmm. cost-benefit analysis, probably the financial institutions are going through, and we only have three states engaged in this small business. And horse racing is very small, and that's
right.
internet
sure.
wagering, as yep. we all know. That you really,
yeah,
really don't, as a financial institution, you're looking and going, eh, you know, maybe it's not, I don't have to really deal with this right now.
Right, right, right. It's just small potatoes.
State lotteries started to move into it there mm-hmm. aggressively over the last year.
Right.
And you had, what was it, I think Michigan, Minnesota, mm-hmm. Georgia, three. Yeah.
That right, I think Minnesota.
Starting to sell their tickets online or engage in games, actually, games
right.
online,
mm-hmm.
that I think that was piquing some interest, but then I believe Minnesota cut back. Didn't they just recently cut back?
They did, yep.
games. I don't know
yep.
if they still sell the
tickets. They had a bill that passed that invalidated
the tickets or
the internet.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so they had a... So again, you look at this novice industry and the ups and downs and you know, it's just a matter of time and there has to be some clear certainty, and until there's the governmental agencies make up their minds
right,
what they
right.
want to do, mm-hmm. there's going to be still going to be uncertainty, which holds back
mm-hmm.
the commercial development, because as you well know, in business world, the worst thing for success in business world is uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
there's some uncertainty in this area.
Sure, no question. Now, we had a couple of new operators open up with Pala and Mohegan Sun
yeah.
Resorts. So, yeah. You know, it's growing in that area. And, of
yeah.
course, the one everybody wants to know about is poker stores.
It's Amaya, man.
Yeah, right, Amaya. I mean, where do we stand in the licensing
Amaya,
there?
Well, Amaya is an applicant here, and mm-hmm. I've engaged in a very thorough, comprehensive, detailed review, not of Amaya, but
right.
of the Amaya purchase of Poker Stars and Full Tilt,
right,
basically
sure,
Rationale
right.
Group, and it was a big transaction.
Right,
and we've done 80 sworn interviews. We've traveled to half a dozen foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this in a very professional way, which will be published to the world,
mm-hmm.
because whatever decision we come down on. Will be scrutinized, and some will hate it, and
right.
some will love it. But
it'll be precedent setting what they think. Yeah.
It'll be done in a way that I can, through this division, have pride saying, this is accurate.
Right, right.
This is accurate.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be precedent setting one way or the other, for sure.
One way or the other, it'll be precedent setting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've done a lot of reviews,
mm-hmm.
and the history of this organization is such, they've been, since 1978, have done a great job, and I'm not going to be the first person to sabotage the great work of this division for the last 35 years.
Okay. I don't want to get too far down into the weeds here, but I need to ask you about things that concern me.
Go ahead.
With the affiliate programs here. You know, you came out with a ruling, what, about 3 or 4 months ago now, where you're going to allow affiliates who had previously been operating in the gray and the black listed areas to operate in New Jersey if they clean their act up. I'm not going to get into why I don't think it's the greatest idea, but nonetheless.
Took some hits on that one, but...
What response have you been getting from those sites? Are they really interested, or are they just going to say, forget it, we're making more money on the gray and the black listed casinos?
It's yet to be seen, because, you know, you're right. We gave them a time frame to make their choice and to weigh it and then go forward. And as you know, I've also told them indirectly or even directly that, oh, by the way, if you stay in the black market and you do business in New Jersey, it's not going to be a threat that you won't be licensed here.
Yeah.
We're going to look at going after you as an illegal operator, too.
Yeah.
And so don't think that I just have a regulatory hat where if you want to do business in New Jersey that I can only go after you from a regulatory standpoint. I also have a law enforcement hat. And we have had in other areas, and I think it's been very public, where we have cease and desist orders against companies, and we have gone so far as to make statements to them that if you don't cease and desist, then we're going to do everything that we have at our disposal, including our law enforcement responsibilities and our criminal prosecutors and our criminal investigators, to go after you. And so there's, it's not a, just a bureaucratic statement to these folks when they make a decision. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't do their business in Maryland and, and, you know, surrounding states and Pennsylvania on the illegal sites. I understand that.
Right.
But we will also be looking at, and we have, continue to look at the illegal gaming sites in New Jersey, the illegal ones.
Right.
Not just the affiliates who deal with those illegal sites, but the illegal site itself.
Right.
And we want to... we want to chase them out as we can. And I know it's difficult. I know it's, many of the operators are not even in the borders of the United States, but there are ways to deal with them.
Okay.
And so this is, the decision we made with regards to the affiliates came after a substantial amount of this dialogue, both here with the industry, meaning the casinos, with the affiliate representatives who we have licensed or have been engaged in. I realized that the decision we've rendered was not maybe viewed by everybody as the proper one, but in the long run, I do believe that it will help the state in moving forward, because those who remain and stay with us or stay with the legal markets will know that they have an opportunity here.
Okay.
Or any legal market. That being, you can work in Europe, too.
Sure,
it's legal markets.
Right.
So, I'm sorry, Roger, you know, I disappointed you on that one, but in the long run, I have confidence we're going to get there.
Okay.
So.
Well, anything we can do to continue to market the online casinos in New Jersey successfully, I'm behind, so.
Yeah,
well, I just want to be at the head of the pack, that's all.
Well, as you know, give me all your suggestions.
Yeah, right.
I'm happy to steal your best ideas and put them into play.
Great. I just want to clean up a couple of things here. You mentioned the casinos in North Jersey. Are you just going to assure the legislators when they can start to look at this, at specific locations, specific companies, things like that, that the DGE can handle, you know, anything they throw your way?
Yeah, at this point in time, I mean, you're dealing with a major policy decision. I mean, the governor has already come out. My boss has come out and said that he's open to the expansion of casinos outside of Atlantic City. The focus is clearly on North Jersey for the obvious reasons that we mentioned, with the population base, the New York market being gigantic with the population base up there. I think that one thing that we'll be called upon to do as part of the review of this is, okay, if it was to be regulated, you know, it won't have to be regulated, but when it would, if it was passed, my point is, and then therefore you would have to regulate it, what would be our suggestions to the policymakers as to what would be in the best interest of the state of New Jersey from a regulatory standpoint that would maximize the benefits to the state of New Jersey as a whole. So I think, you know, if somebody was asking, can you regulate? Of course we can regulate it. That's the easiest decision known to man. I mean, the success of regulating here in Atlantic City is easily transferable to to any jurisdiction or any section of the state. But that's not really the issue. It's, to me, it's the people need to decide if they want to have it expanded, and if they do decide they want to have it expanded, then how is it going to be operated to benefit the state? Because there's been a huge investment, obviously, of capital here in Atlantic City. This is a very, not depressed, but it's very, it's an area that's been hurt with the loss of four casinos. If you have an expansion outside the state, like any other competition, what will that impact be on a region that has it now? Well, the competition is, will it grow the industry? Well, it may grow it, but you're still going to have, in my personal opinion, it's going to have a negative impact against Pennsylvania. It's going to have a negative impact in Atlantic City. It's going to have a negative impact in the casinos that are yet to be built in New York, because we all know this. I mean, the size of the pie is only so large, and as competition continues to increase, we all can see the handwriting on the wall, what's happened elsewhere, not just here in Atlantic City, but elsewhere. So we have a bigger issue. What is in the best interest of the state of New Jersey if you regulate this, and how do you benefit then those who are here successfully operating now from being so hurt by the competition that they're no longer able to operate? I don't have those answers yet, but I'm sure we'll be involved in that dialogue, because quite honestly, we have the details. We know what has happened today, historically, based on competition from Pennsylvania, Maryland, New York, Ohio, now even Massachusetts, soon to be Washington, D.C., region of Maryland. I mean, it's pretty obvious, and how do we deal with that?
Well, it's good to hear that you'll consider that as a saturation issue. You know?
I definitely believe that we have plenty of expertise. We have plenty of information. The executive branch of government can provide that as research information. Obviously, the policymakers can do whatever they want with it. They can say, you're wrong, not use it, or they can say, thank you very much, and we'll look at adapting policies and procedures, if it is approved by the population, to try to do what's in the best interest of the state. So I don't really think anybody in their right mind is looking at this to harm people. They're looking, they're saying, like, what is in the best interest of the state? Because, you know, we all know, gaming will continue to expand in this Northeast Corridor, and it's every day you read an article about somebody else looking at it. We're talking now about Atlanta, the four casinos in New York that haven't even started construction yet.
And then there'll be four more in the New York metropolitan area, you know, after they get that up and running.
I mean, and then what, you know, do you have a model that restricts the number of licenses, which we don't do here in Atlantic City? It's a laissez-faire business model, but other states have said, okay, we're going to have a casino in this area, or a casino in this jurisdiction region, only one in this area, or we're going to have it, we're going to have a limited number in the whole state. You know, you could come up with any model you wanted to. There's a lot of dialogue that would have to occur in this area, and I think we all know that, or we all know from being in New Jersey, that dialogue is just starting, and it's in its infancy stages. And there's going to be a lot of interested parties, and we'll be very happy to be neutral and provide information to any question that comes up for those who are for it, against it, that want to do it, that don't want to do it. We'll give you the facts. And listen, I'm busy here in Atlantic City. You know, if they want to give me more work, fine. If they don't want to give me more work, gaming in the state of New Jersey is not going to go away.
Now, you guys have done a great job, you know, since Governor Christie came in and you know wanted to streamline the regulatory system here. But still, you know, the regulatory cost in New Jersey is one of the highest in the nation. Any other things you could do to reduce the cost of regulation? For example, possibly using private labs rather than having your own lab.
Well, I'll deal with that. Yes, as far as regulatory reform, we just adopted a third model of regulatory reform since we've been here, based on our dialogue with the industry. I think it just took effect last week, right, or 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I've already talked to the industry and told them that at this point in time, until they come to me with some ideas for further regulatory reform, I don't have any more regulatory reform ideas up my sleeve.
Right.
So our continued dialogue with them will go on, and as they present ideas to us, we'll be open to them. And if we have to have another round of regulatory reform, we'll do it.
Okay.
Now, as far as cost savings on privatizing the lab, in my mind, I've looked at this. There are no cost savings.
Yeah.
The industry agrees. There are no cost savings on privatizing the lab. In fact, we believe that the cost would probably go up because you would have a bifurcated approach. We have one-stop shopping now, and we're in Nevada, you still have a lab representatives.
Right.
So you have private, does the work, gives it to the lab at the state. State has to prove what the private did, and then you go again. So their system is pretty bureaucratic.
Right.
And when you add up all the costs, I don't think there's cost savings, and the industry can prove there are cost savings. I'm happy to look at them.
Okay.
The true cost savings in any regulatory body are based on the number of personnel you have assigned to do the work. And I think one of the things that New Jersey includes in its regulatory numbers are the cost of our law enforcement personnel. Our law enforcement personnel, when you combine it with our regulatory personnel, shows the regulatory cost that you said maybe is highest in the nation.
Right.
When I see other states, they don't include the cost of their law enforcement personnel that they have assigned to the casinos. Let's put everybody on the same equal plane. You give me all your costs, regulatory costs, and all your law enforcement costs, and split it up to the casino, and let's see who's the highest and who's the lowest.
Okay.
So I think that we've done a great job here. When I started, we had 11 casinos and 343 people assigned. Law enforcement, regulatory people, to 11 casinos. We added Revel, we cut staff.
Yeah.
We did not add any staff. So we went to 12 casinos. We lost Atlantic Club in that fiscal year 14, we cut staff again. We had last year when we lost three casinos, we cut staff again. We now have 270 staff assigned to eight casinos, bricks and mortar. So we have adjusted a lot, and that includes law enforcement.
Yeah.
And the industry knows that. They've seen what we've done. We've streamlined. We've eliminated supervisory positions. We're at the point where I need to focus on integrity. I'm not cutting for cutting's sake.
Sure.
If it's right. We're going to have integrity, and we're going to reach a certain limit, and I'm going to tell them, I'm not cutting anymore.
Right.
Now, am I there yet?
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. I look at this every month. So I'm fairly confident right now that we're solid on integrity. Can I continue to reduce costs? Probably. But we just went over a report today, since our fiscal year ends. Fiscal year in New Jersey ends on June 30th. The bills get all paid by July 30th, and at the end of the fiscal year, we then know what we spent on regulation. We had an appropriation for last year of $60 million for the commission and myself. Our total expenditures last year were $48
million. Great.
We have $12 million cost savings that's returned to the industry.
Great.
So they don't even know that yet.
Right.
So you have a scoop.
That's great. Well, that's congratulations on that, because I remember a few years ago it was up in the 70s. So,
Listen, I acknowledge that, and the industry, we meet regularly on this. Had meetings with them on their concerns with the cost, because it's only being borne by 8 casinos now instead of 12.
Sure.
And I acknowledge that I don't want to have them pay a disproportionate more because there's just 8 casinos opposed to 12.
Great.
And they know we're working with them, again, they also know that they'll call me and criticize me if and believe me, and that's fine. But
well, I've told you this before that you're one regulator that I've seen more praise from casino executives than any regulator I've ever known in my life. So
don't believe it all.
So well, congratulations on that and the job you've done here, because it's
thank you, Rod.
Been a very great day.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. If you want to read more about this issue or any issue in the gaming industry, read our magazine, GGB Magazine, or visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, subscribe to GGB News. For more information, visit ggbnews.com. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.